entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio Studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
Hello there. Welcome in. Sunday morning, 22nd day of December. And it is the best of Downtown. Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell here with you. Brought to you this morning by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Our weekly look back at some of our favorite recent conversations. Three good ones for you this morning. Some football talk from University of Maine Black Bear coach Nick Charlton, as they announced 8 new members of the team on early signing day. We talk with veteran newsman WABI TV5 news director Jim Morris about his career and upcoming retirement. And we get things underway this morning by revisiting our conversation with, one of the biggest sports legends to come out of Boston, former Patriots general manager, NFL scout, broadcaster, author of the wonderful book Present at the Creation, along with Ron Borges, Upton Bell, who joined us to talk about his family's intimate connection to the history of the National Football League. Good afternoon, Upton.
Great to be here. You're giving me a break from impeachment and the investigation of the Patriots. Unbelievable. What's going to go longer? I think the Patriots.
I agree with you on both of them. I can use a break. I've had all I need of either party in both of those cases.
You're absolutely right. It's ridiculous. So just go to Netflix. You can get The Irishman. You can get Marriage Italian Style. And you can also get Two Popes. That's the escape.
Have you watched Two Popes? I've heard very good things about it.
I have not seen it yet, no. But the latest on the Academy Awards and the films that they think are going to be the ones are three of those, and including The Two Popes. And The Irishman is the front runner, although, as I call it, To Live and Die in L.A. is right up there also. So it should be absolutely a fascinating year. Love the movies.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that. We want to talk about this wonderful project that you've been working on with Jeff Barnt, and you were kind enough to send along some of the early clips. Jeff works at Arlington Community Media, and they're doing a wonderful 8-part series on your family and the long association with the NFL. And these segments you sent me are just terrific.
Well, he actually started in Maine, and
right.
I hope you'll have him on sometime, because he covered when Stephen King bought your station and has quite a background there. But he himself has quite a background as an investigative reporter and anchor, both in Philadelphia and Washington, D.C., and other areas. And he approached me along with ACMI about 5 months ago and said, we're looking to do some type of documentary. Now, this eventually could be on a major channel somewhere, because the whole idea was to take a look at, particularly in the 100th year of my family, my mother, my father, and the roles that they played in professional football, and then take a look at the life that I led in the early days and then right through the Colts and through to today. So it's quite a saga. It's quite an undertaking. And when you have somebody like Barnes who understands what it's like to do, you know, hard investigations and put things together, the first 4 segments, which you've seen, are quite interesting, and some of them are very funny.
Oh, there are some great stories in there, but I want to go back to the beginning and the fact that none of this, the long Bell family association with the National Football League, would not have been possible without your mother, who was a very successful actress on both stage and screen.
Well, yeah, and the interesting thing about her, and it's coming out more and more now, in fact, Frank Fitzpatrick, famous writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, wrote a long story on her just a month or two ago, and how actually Burt Bell ended up in football and ended up owning the Philadelphia Eagles because of Francis Upton, because at that time his father, who was one of the richest men in Pennsylvania, the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, and also second in seniority on the Walter Camp Rules Committee, and actually negotiated with Teddy Roosevelt over saving college football. So his father was very, very wealthy, big college guy. and had no interest in Bert Bell ever getting involved in pro football. In fact, in those days, it was looked down on. So to make a long story short, he met my mother. She was engaged to Bernard Baruch, the very famous financier's son. She had been discovered actually working behind the perfume counter in Macy's. And 5 years later, she was a star on Broadway making twice the money my father ever made. They eventually get married secretly. Walter Winchell announces the engagement. They get married in Philadelphia. They walk down to bankruptcy court. They buy the Frankford Yellow Jackets with her money out of bankruptcy. And walking back to the hotel, look up and see a billboard with Franklin Delano Roosevelt's National Recovery Eagle on it. And my father says, that's the name of the team. And that is really storybook stuff. That doesn't happen today.
I love the story and the piece I saw about your father's pursuit of a talented college football player from Minnesota and how that led to one of the most important changes in the game's history.
Well, yeah, because, again, people don't understand today that don't know going back that Bert Bell invented the pro football draft and actually the draft that is used today by every major league. And the only came about, again, by chance, because at that time the Chicago Bears, the New York Football Giants, the Washington Redskins, and the Packers really dominated pro football because there was no draft. You just went out after the season was over, and you signed, whatever players you want. Well, in this case, he was very, very poor, along with Art Rooney of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they couldn't sign those big-name players. So he did make a deal to get on the train and go out to Minnesota to sign a very famous college star at the University of Minnesota, and basically thought he had a deal with him. And in the end, the player ended up with the Brooklyn Dodgers, used Bert Bell as a wedge, and on the way back on a train, which you'll see in the video, he finally decided we've got to do something about it. So he went to the owners' meetings and said, you know what, we're only as strong as our weakest link. He said, we have no money. The Steelers and the Eagles and other teams in the league, the league will go broke. And he got them to institute what is today the pro football draft. And so out of the disappointment and losing the player from the University of Minnesota, he ends up inventing the draft. So he is really the father of modern pro football.
13 years as commissioner of the National Football League, and also steered the league through some of its toughest challenges, including another league, the challenge from another football league, and then a gambling scandal that might have destroyed the whole thing.
Well, and let's come back again today discussing all the different things that happened, because the night before the championship game in New York, the Bears are playing the Giants, Frank Hogan, the district attorney, called. My father said, you better get on a train and come up here. I know you were due to come up here tomorrow. Come up today because we think we have two people involved in a gambling scandal. And in fact, it's interesting because one of the authors that I recommended to you on the life of Sid Luckman gets into that whole thing and how many of the NFL owners at that time were also high-stakes gamblers. The New York Giants was owned by a bookmaker, the Maras. The Steelers, Art Rooney, won something like $200,000, $300,000 a day. Even Bert Bell gambled and would go to Saratoga. So, I mean, there's so much history, Rich, that goes through this and through this whole documentary that we're going to be able to lay out through my family, but the experiences I've had, what you're really going to see about what the real league was and is.
We're talking with Upton Bell on Downtown. We've chatted about this a little bit before, but can you talk a bit about your experiences as a young scout traveling through the Jim Crow South?
Well, that's going to be the next two. We're actually doing back-to-back segments called Race in the South and the NFL. And actually, when we looked at this whole thing, and I'll be sending you copies of it, is that in 1963, of course, that period from the 60s through to the early 70s, probably including today, was the most violent time in America. Cities were on fire. People were shooting each other. There was great unrest and race. Two of the Kennedys were murdered. Martin Luther King, and I was there the day that he was murdered in Memphis. All of these things and were churning in the South. And so I started to scout. And in those days, you drove most of the South. So you get in the car in Baltimore, and you would drive from Baltimore, in my case, to the Colts, where they were, all the way throughout the South, out through Texas, and actually to the coast. You'd be gone for 3 or 4 months. But I remember the first time arriving in 1964 in Mississippi, and going into a restaurant, and I looked like I was 16 years old because most scouts in those days looked like they were 90, and I looked like I was 16, and somebody asked me, what did I do? And I said, I was a scout for the Baltimore Colts. And the guy laughed. And during the conversation, he said, 5 years ago, we were still lynching people. And I kind of said to myself, my God, what did I get myself into here? And through those years from 64 on in, I spent many times in small towns wondering what people, if you couldn't prove who you were and they thought you were a freedom rider coming from the North, I might have found myself face down the Chattahoochee River. And there was danger everywhere. There was fire, firing guns from the Natchez Trace going from Jackson, Mississippi to Alcorn A&M. There were many, many things. But what came out of that, Rich, was what you see today. In those days, maybe 5, maybe 10% of the NFL, maybe, was African-American. But when the AFL came in 1960, they went much more than the NFL into drafting and signing African-American players. But in those days, throughout the South, in many of the great places, Alcorn A&M, Mississippi Valley State, Jackson State, Grambling, of course, was one of the great feeders into the pros. You name them. The greatest players were not at Alabama or Mississippi or Tennessee,
right,
or all the big-time colleges. They were at Alcorn A&M and Southern University and those places. To go to those campuses, they were way off, with the exception of Jackson State, which was right in Jackson, Mississippi. You know, in those days, you would get drive down the Natchez Trace from Jackson, Mississippi to Alcorn A&M, 200 miles of some of the most beautiful country you've ever seen, but there you could get picked off either by a police officer who were firing at African-Americans or vice versa. And it was extremely dangerous and extremely prejudiced, the likes you've never seen. Yet, when you went to those campuses that had less than anybody at the major schools, you'd see some of the greatest players you've ever seen. And I remember coming back many times and telling Don Shula, I said, you know, I know that we draft players in the third and fourth and fifth round from these schools, but really, they're first-round choices. And that's where a lot of it's changed today. Now a player like from Mississippi Valley State and places like that would be taken in the first round. Then they weren't. So there were many difficulties, but the violence and the things that went on, and I will give you a quick example. In 1968, I was at spring practice at Memphis State, and I wanted to stay there 2 or 3 days. And I said to the coach, I said, I want to stay an extra day. And the coach said to me, which was very, very unusual, he said, I think you ought to go home. And I said, Coach, should I do something? Are you upset with me? He said, no. He said, Martin Luther King is coming into town today to lead strike of the garbage men on Friday. And he said, if I were you, I'd go home. So when he said that to me, I went back to the hotel, changed my reservations, got on a plane, flew back to Baltimore, got off, looked up at the television set, and Martin Luther King had been murdered.
Wow.
And that, many, many things that I saw have stayed with me the rest of my life. But more importantly, I've lived long enough to see the day that the NFL now is 80% African-American. And if you looked in those days, you would think it would never happen. They are many of the things that we cover in there, and many, many areas where also, as I state in this documentary, I know as a white person that what it's like to be in a place where you're the only white person in a black community. So imagine an African-American today in an all-white world. It gives you a real sense of the values and the things that the African-American community has had to live with all of these years.
Certainly does. Also, some very funny moments in this documentary. You arrived in Foxborough at the age, I believe, of 32 to become general manager of the Patriots. I had some challenges working with Billy Sullivan, and I was fascinated at the story of Billy Sullivan getting the folks at Schaefer Beer to lend their name to the stadium, but Billy Sullivan cutting so many corners along the way that in a stadium sponsored by a beer company, the toilets didn't work.
Well, I mean, there's so many funny things in that segment. Eventually, you'll be able to see it, your audience, hopefully regionally and nationally. But actually, when I first arrived, the Patriots office was in the left field of Fenway Park. And when they'd hit baseball, sometimes they would come down through the ceiling and into my office. Also, our assistant general manager had his office in the men's room. You can't believe what it was like going from the Colts to the Patriots, even though they had joined the National Football League. The stadium, which was Schaefer Stadium, as you point out, after the beer, I had the architect tell me, he said, after it was built, he said it was also already obsolete. we're moving into this place. The toilets didn't flush. The Board of Health turned us down. The largest traffic jam in, and I wrote about it in a book on the history of the Patriots called The Night the Carburetors Died. I mean, every day I awakened, it was a nightmare to go down there. But the greatest was on a Saturday before our opening game against the Giants in a preseason game, I got a call from Sullivan. He said, you better get down here. He said, we got all the owners here. And some of the media, he said, the toilets don't work, so we're going to have a super flush. I thought he was kidding. And so I got down there, and actually, NFL Films has it somewhere. But actually, on the count of three, they got on the loudspeaker system, and they went one, two, three, flush. And at that, 30 toilets were flushed to see if it worked, and it finally worked.
That is a great story. Well, we look forward to seeing all of this and the documentary being put together by Jeff Barnt. Before we let you go, Upton, though, I want to get your thoughts on this year's Patriots. Three games left in the regular season. Is this the end for Tom Brady as a Patriot?
I believe it is. But I believe that probably what will happen is if it doesn't get any better with that kind of three-men relationship, is that I think he'll retire before he'll go play for another team. That's what I think will really happen. But more importantly, what has happened here is you've seen what can happen. Kraft, Brady, and Belichick have been a terrific group over 20 years. They won a lot of championships. But like a lot of relationships, they last a long enough time that it begins to become frayed at the edges. Number one, what I see is Belichick did his worst job this year of providing the team with enough offense. Mm. Defense, they're terrific. They're not the greatest, but they're terrific. But offensively, it's not only the receivers, the offensive line, running backs hurt. But I really think that Brady way down deep, and that's why you see him morose after some of these games, is that he really feels maybe at the end of his career that they did not provide him with enough talent to really win. They're getting by. But I think the confluence of lack of talent of the type of teams they had in the past, kind of Bill maybe thinking he should move on, Brady kind of feeling the pressure, and Kraft not, and that's the key, Rich. When they didn't essentially pick up his option, And he said, I want to be free to make a decision at the end. I said, there's the big thing. he's either going to get them over a barrel if they go on and win again, which I don't think they will, or he's going to walk away. But for once, he has the hammer,
right,
which he never did before.
Upton Bell, check out his wonderful book with Ron Borges, Present at the Creation. Can't wait to see more of this documentary and really excited when all the fans get a chance to see it. It's going to be a wonderful look at the NFL and your family's intimate history with it. Upton, thank you so much, as always, for visiting with us.
Great to be on your show, Rich. Thanks very much.
That's Upton Bell here in the Best of Downtown on your Sunday morning. When we come back, a little more football talk with University of Maine head coach Nick Charlton. It's Downtown on Z62 Retro Radio.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free Maine State inspections for the life of the vehicle, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
You love going out to eat and saving money. Check out these weekly specials at the Ground Round on Audland Road in Bangor. Every Monday, it's all-you-can-eat sketti and meatballs for $10.99. Tuesdays, buy one burger, get one free. Wednesdays, all-you-can-eat ribs with french fries and coleslaw for just $14.99. Thursday at the Ground Round is kids' night with 99-cent kids' meals from 4 to 8 p.m. Fridays, all-you-can-eat fish fry with french fries and coleslaw for $14.99. Saturdays, slow roast prime rib is available. And Sundays, 99-cent kids' meals all day long. For more details, visit groundround.com.
ClearPoint Capital is excited to be the official financial advisor sponsor of the Maine Black Bears. At ClearPoint Capital, our client relationships are built upon trust, proactive service, state-of-the-art planning tools, and a disciplined investment process. ClearPoint Capital is your financial advocate. Your success is our success. See what our team can do for you and your family. ClearPoint Capital and the Maine Black Bears. Now that's a winning combination.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. Call us today at 307-7718.
Winter's here. Winter's cold weather and snow is finally arriving. Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street in Bangor, wants you to be ready for it. Bring your vehicle in right now and have it checked before the really cold weather kicks in. They'll check the battery, antifreeze, shocks, alignment, and don't forget the snow tires. Don't wait. For once, get ahead of the really cold winter weather. Make your appointment today. Call Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street, or check them out on the web at bangortire.com. Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street, Bangor. More than just a tire store.
Give yourself the gift that keeps on giving, the gift of saving money with Fujitsu heat pumps from Valley Home Services. Now through December 31st, get instant discounts of $400 for single zone systems and $800 for multi-zone. Combined with Efficiency Main rebates, and you save a minimum of $900. With Efficiency Main financing, you can save up to 50% on energy bills for as little as $30 a month. Celebrate the season of giving with savings from Fujitsu Heat Pumps and Valley Home Services. Home is our middle name.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening.
Last weekend, before sight, Christmas. You're ready though, Carrie, I have no doubt.
Everything is ready, the cooking has been done. We're good to go.
Good, good, glad to hear that. I like it when it's a stress-free, not stressful, last couple of days before the holiday.
I like to be prepared. I learned that long ago.
That certainly helps. But whatever you're doing, glad you've chosen to join us on this Sunday morning. We'll talk a little bit more football right now. It was early signing day for college football teams this past week, and Nick Charlton of the Maine Black Bears joined us to give us a little bit of information on 8 new Black Bears that were announced on Wednesday. Big day for the Black Bears, early signing day today, and you've got 8 new Black Bears in the fold. That's pretty exciting news.
Yeah, you know, it's been a really good recruiting period for us, and we were able to sign 8 guys. And you know, the signing period has been going on, the early one, for 3 years. So this is the most we've signed, and I feel really good about the class.
What was your top priority, or were you just looking for the 8 best athletes you could get?
I mean, we have some priorities at certain positions, but, you know, ultimately we want to sign the guys that we had visited in December and were ready to make a decision. So we had some guys who were, you know, priority list at certain positions, and then there'll be some others in January that fits their timetable. So it kind of varied, I would say.
Let's talk first about a transfer from Rutgers, running back, 5'11", 210-pounder from Piscataway, New Jersey. What can you tell us about Elijah Banwell?
Yeah, so Elijah, I recruited out of high school when I had North Jersey. He actually went to the same high school as Charles Mitchell, who just graduated for us. But it's really good high school football, and, you know, he was a great player coming out. Played at Rutgers a little bit, was on special teams, and was just behind a couple guys at running back. So, you know, he entered the portal, and we had recruited him, got him up on a visit, and, you know, we were lucky enough to be able to get him. So I feel really good about him right now.
You've gone back to Europe. You've had success with Copenhagen's own Matthias Stalso. Tell us about offensive lineman from Dusseldorf, Germany, Tim Burgartz.
Yeah, I mean, Tim's a big boy. You know, we were very fortunate to be able to get him up on a visit. Had a couple other things in the MAC in terms of offers. And, you know, he had an ACL injury, so he missed a little bit of time his senior year. But everything checks out and everything's good. So we were very lucky to get him up on a visit. And actually, Matthias was his host on the visit. So,
oh, that's wonderful.
Yes, certainly by design. So it was a good pass. And, you know, we think he can be a really good tackle for us down the line.
Another running back you brought in from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Tavion Banks. Tell us about him.
Yeah, Tavion's just a hardworking, strong kid, has speed, plays very good high school football at Bethlehem Catholic. Actually, is probably about 15 minutes from Anthony Harris, the quarterback we signed. So it's all really the same area. But, you know, he's a very good-looking back who, you know, we'll see. I mean, he's going to challenge to play, and we have a few guys who are, you know, in that room now. But, you know, we feel pretty good about him.
He's another guy, and I noticed a lot of them had this distinction. They were awfully good students. You got a lot of honor roll guys in this class. How important is that to have guys who are smart?
It's definitely important. We, you know, we look at it, and naturally you want to take guys who – we're on a roll, you know, team captains. Those are the type of things you really look for. And I think this group, you know, I think we had 5 or 6 guys who were on a roll out of the 8. And, you know, it really varies across the board, but ultimately we do look for that because you want the best student athletes you can get. And we feel like we did that just for this period.
You mentioned Anthony Harris, a quarterback from Nazareth, Pennsylvania, left-hander. What did you like about him?
With the last few quarterbacks that we've had, started with Chris Ferguson and then Joe, and now with these guys, we've been able to see them throw. So we saw him in camp. One of our coaches was able to see him play in a game. So he played, had a very productive senior season. He's a dual threat guy, does a lot of things, was a winner, really has that it factor, great family, good student. You know, just felt really good about him and, you know, in terms of as a player, but also what he can do off the field. I just think he's a real leader.
And another quarterback out of Philly and West Catholic Prep, Derek Robertson.
Yeah, so Derek's a Bridgeton Academy guy, actually. He came up from Iona Prep, which is a big high school in New York, and he prepped for a year, had a lot of interest, didn't end up with any offers, and came to a bunch of games. I think he went to 3 games in the fall for us. Which were all wins, so he was 3-0 up here. So Derek had a good thing going. But he very interested in us. We were very interested in him, and he's actually going to be a mid-year guy, so he'll be here in January. So
that's great.
Feel good about him as well, yeah.
Nick Charlton with us here on Downtown. You graduated some talented defensive linemen, and so you got a new one coming in from Brick Township, New Jersey, 6'4", 240, John Costanza.
Yeah, great kid, really good family, very good program down there in South Jersey. You know, John's a hardworking kid. He's got long hair that everybody will notice that I suggest that he keep because, you know, it's a good signature. But he's a great kid, tough football player, our type of guy. I think he's going to, you know, be able to make an impact. He's all in, very bought into what we're doing here. Visited for the Sacred Heart game earlier in the year. So we'll be signing a few more at defensive line, but, you know, he's definitely the first one and one of the first to commit. So he's a big part of our class.
And let's hear about this. A defensive back from Nazareth, Pennsylvania, Shakur Small, 6'3", 185, and appears to be, from what we saw, extremely fast.
Yeah, Shakur is a very interesting, intriguing prospect. You know, he's a guy who has played a lot of football, played for a good program, tough kid, you know, can do a lot of different things, has ball skills, really liked his family, you know, had a few offers and things like that, so we were fortunate to get him on a visit last weekend, and he really liked it. And it went well, and he connected with our guys. And, you know, he's a guy who's going to compete at safety. We have a few more guys that we are going to sign at that spot. That's a big area of need for this class and going into January. So we feel really good about him.
And finally, a linebacker from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 6'2", 230, Tyshawn Stewart.
Yeah, so he was the first to commit in the class, visited unofficially over the summer. It's actually Jaquan Blair's high school.
Nice.
So we had a connection out there, and Mike Ryan's recruited that area for a long time. You know, great-looking linebacker, young kid, very athletic, long arms, rangy, can tackle, can cover. I think he can do a lot of different things for us. So we think he's a real steal for the early signing period.
So what's the next phase for you? Is there a little break in recruiting before you can start up again?
Yeah, so, I mean, this week, that was the beginning of the dead period, so we can't go out, can't do anything. And we were starting to evaluate what we needed to do moving forward, who we thought we were going to sign, and, you know, addressing the areas of need. So we get a little bit of time right now, so I'll be here and get a little family time and those type of things, and our staff will get that, which is great. And then, you know, as the dead period starts to wind down at the beginning of January, that's when we start to ramp it up. You know, we'll stay recruiting our guys that we're looking at for that February 5th signing day throughout the whole period. But when it opens back up about mid-January, that's when we'll start actually heading out on the road and having visits and things like that.
How many scholarships do you have left?
I mean, it's always a little bit in flux just with our ability to move some things around. But we'll end up signing a similar class probably in February, so it'll be comparable. You know, we signed 8 this time, so it'd be somewhere in that area, depending on how the scholarship works. But, you know, we expect it to be, a good-sized class overall. We got a lot of guys to replace, some needs and some depth situations. So we'll be looking at freshmen. We'll be in the portal. We'll be doing all those things. And, you know, we've already evaluated a lot of that stuff, and that's why we were able to sign the 8 guys we did, and, you know, we'll keep doing it in January.
And do you hold on to maybe one or two of those in case something comes up in spring or summer?
Yeah, typically we do here. I mean, we have 63 full scholarships, and, we always sign pretty close to that. Last year, you know, my first year doing this, we really emphasized pushing that towards the 63, and then also having close to 100 players total on the roster, with walk-ons and everybody like that. So we ended up with 99. So this year it'll be similar. We'll end up having a couple spots after the signing day, hopefully, so that just we can see what opens up in the spring. And then we'll continue to build the walk-on pool and then partial scholarship type guys as we go.
Chris Ferguson, of course, entered the transfer protocol and is looking to play one more year somewhere. Obviously, that's an opportunity for him to try and take his game to the next level. We're seeing a lot more of those grad transfers. How much of that, too, was also you wanting to go and the staff wanting to go in a different direction with the style of quarterback?
We didn't, with Chris, everybody was very transparent, and Chris and I have a very good relationship. So we had conversations prior to, his decision to leave the program. And, that wasn't something that we had pushed him to do or anything like that. That was a conversation we had, and ultimately he felt like it was best for him and his family to do that. And I fully supported him. I talked to him earlier today and continue to support him. So, I think Joe and the direction the offense is going in is something that's, very explosive and electric and all those type of things, because I think we have some good skill players. But at the same time, we're always going to fit our offense to the quarterback. So for Chris, he chose to leave. I totally support that. But at the same time, we have to be prepared to fill those gaps in and continue to recruit guys.
Absolutely. Well, it looks like you're off to a tremendous start with this first group of eight in the early signing period. Congratulations to you and the staff. Enjoy that little break and have a wonderful Christmas with the family. And we look forward to more exciting news when the next signing day rolls around.
You as well. Have a Merry Christmas, Rich.
Maine football coach Nick Charlton here on the Best of Downtown talking about some of those new Black Bears brought into the fold this week. When we return, we talk with Jim Morris, WABI TV5 news director, hanging up the microphone at the end of the month. We'll look back at his career with Jim next on the Best of Downtown.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Central Street Farmhouse, downtown Bangor, for the best home brewing ingredients, equipment, and advice that you'll find anywhere. Plus, make your own wine right in the store. How does that work? Pick a wine kit, make an appointment, and whip up 6 gallons of the best wine you'll ever taste in less than 30 minutes. 2 months later, come back to bottle it and take it home. They offer these wine classes every day they're open, Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Call 992-4454 or see them on Facebook to find out more.
Come in to enjoy a nice lunch at the Sea Dog Brewing Company in Bangor. Happy hour after a long day at work or for a delicious dinner with family or friends. Looking for some fun during the week? Well, the Sea Dog has the best theme nights around. Come in for Monday night socials with Riff Johnson. Tuesdays are $2 taco and $5 margarita night. Wednesday is our cornhole tournament with Sea Dog gift cards for prizes. On Friday and Saturday nights, we have your favorite live bands playing for your enjoyment. And let's not forget, it's football season, and the Sea Dog will always have the best games on. Make sure you like Sea Dog Brewing Company Bangor on Facebook for all of our upcoming events, and we'll see you at the Sea Dog, Front Street, Bangor, or on the web at seadogbrewing.com.
Penobscot Theater Company presents...
I love books. Last week, I read quite a few.
An exhilarating tale of empowerment.
I wonder if I'm not just a bit different from my friends.
A brave little girl in a big bad world.
That's not right.
This holiday, Roald Dahl's Matilda the Musical. Now through December 29th at Bangor's Historic Opera House. 942-3333 and penobscottheater.org.
Even if you're little, you can do a lot.
What makes a community thrive? The people who live in it. When you use your First National Bank Visa debit card at participating local businesses, you save on everyday purchases while supporting the people who work day in and day out to make your town a vibrant, unique community. Receive cash back on purchases and support the local businesses that make our communities thrive. Bank local, buy local. Learn more at dreamfirstrewards.com. First National Bank. Dream first because you can. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on in to Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a partridge in a pear tree.
Back here on Downtown, the Best Of Show on a Sunday. You started playing that, Karen. I want to hear the whole thing.
It's the way it always is.
Just to hear Beaker, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Best of Downtown. Hey, earlier this week, we talked with old friend Jim Morris, longtime news director at WABI TV5. Jim has announced that he's retiring at the end of the month, and we had a chance to look back on his career and talk about all kinds of things with Jim Morris. Jim, welcome.
Hello, thank you. Good to be here. So I'm leading off like Tommy Harper, huh?
Yes.
I state myself or what?
You still have that level of speed of Tommy Harper. Speaking of that, well, since you went to baseball initially, I mean, you were playing baseball well into your 40s and maybe beyond.
56. Right? I hung it up at 56.
Wow.
Yeah, 6 years ago.
Holy cow.
I was playing in a men's league, mostly central Maine. They're spread out all over Maine. So you traveled a lot on Sunday mornings and occasionally on Wednesdays. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you've been at Channel 5 now for, what is it, 22, 23 years?
Almost 25 this time around. Yeah, I was there with you in radio way back when for 3 years, back in the early 80s. And then went over to Channel 7, VII, and spent a couple of years there in television. And then moved on to Pennsylvania, stayed there for a little over 8 years, and then came back. And came back to Channel 7. They were kind enough to hire me again. After the first time around, they still thought that I was valuable enough to bring back. And so I was very fortunate to be able to find a job because I just wanted to come back to Maine at that time. And then a couple of years there, I came over to Channel 5, WABI, and I've been there ever since, almost 25 years.
And, you know, we were talking about this with Bill Green. Yeah. Everybody's retiring, but me. We're talking to Bill Green. We talked to Timmy about it before he left. And you know, it's remarkable being in a fairly small city like Bangor, the level of talent that we've all had the chance to work with through the years.
That is remarkable, Rich. I mean, working with you, I always admired your work, even way back when. You were young and foolish, but you were always very good at what you did. You really were great on the sports mic. That's where you really, and you were good as a country western DJ. I remember that back with the BGW days.
Yeah, that was fun.
And that was, but you know, Steve Martin and Bill Patrick and Gary Tangway and Tim Throckmorton came through there. And, you know, I'm going to forget Gary Thorne because there's so many of them. It's such a long list of impressive names that, that came through. George Hale, of course, you know, and on it goes. And just when you start out, and I was doing radio, you know, when I was in college, and that was the first broadcast gig. And when you start out with that kind of an all-star lineup, you have no idea. You have no clue. You think, oh, this is the way it is. You go to an AM radio station in Bangor, Maine, and all the people are this good. Well, I'm not very good, but they bring you along really quickly because that's your standard. My God, what a high bar that is. And by osmosis, you become better than you should be. And then after a couple of years or so, or many years in the business, you reflect back and go, my God, was I lucky. You know, it really is remarkable. I can't think of anywhere else with this size, you know, of a population where you could walk into a situation like that and have that many all-star broadcasters to learn from.
So early 80s, when you started out of the military, going to college, what shifts were you working at the old WABI?
Well, I was doing Super Gold on the solid gold, on the solid gold highway of hits, AM91. That was back in, I was mostly doing weekends, of course, you know, Saturdays and Sunday nights. You'd have to swing back in the afternoon, too, or in the morning to do Casey Kasem's Top 40. It came on a very flimsy LP that was like a throwaway. I think it dissolved if it hit sunlight.
I may have a couple of those old American Top 40s.
Yeah, you're not supposed to.
What?
And you just incriminated yourself. And there's no statute of limitations. No statute on that.
Someone tell Don Bastani I don't really have them.
Or Joan Kasem or whatever. You know, you're in trouble now. But, we would spend those, and our job was to babysit it because everything was physical back then. It wasn't ones and O's. It wasn't digital. You had to physically put something on, a reel or a cart, you know, that was the size of it was like a big, thick piece of toast or something you threw in a machine. And then we had these albums and records, 45s, and you had to physically do that. You had to engage it. I thought that was a blast. That was the funnest time I ever had to broadcast.
And you knew the really popular songs because they had that cue scratch at the beginning of them.
Exactly,
so you would pop them up slowly.
Right, because it would be rude. But speaking of that, on the way in, I was listening to The Zone here, and you know, I like this format and everything, but can't we go back to that music? It was great music. I mean, I really admire it. You had Bad Fingers, No Matter What, deftly segued into the Spencer Davis Groups. Give me some lovin'.
Yeah.
You know, this is good stuff, good tunes.
No question about it. But you bring up a great point. Jim Morris with us here from WABI TV5. And we all have that opportunity to learn the craft, first of all, around really talented people, but in fairly low-pressure situations. You know, running the board at 11 o'clock at night or American Top 40 or doing commercials during a Red Sox game.
Yep.
With automation now, you don't see those opportunities for young broadcasters.
No, you don't. And back then, I mean, the audience, we were 5,000 watts. I think when the sun came up, you couldn't broadcast until, Hale got in there and somehow figured it out.
Right.
Actually, but at night, we didn't have one of those things where we were, you know, a super station or you up the power at night or anything like that. You just got what you got. I mean, the audience was basically moose, bear, skunks, and maybe five drunk people at Lucerne Lake, you know, on a summer night. And that's what
are my people.
those are my peeps. I'm not complaining. That was great.
Now, did you notice
but
a difference?
But you can only play Ferry Cross the Mercy by Jerry and the Pacemaker so many times when the same guy calls, you know.
Right. Every day. Every day. The same song. Yeah. And when you moved to TV, and you were in some big markets, you were in Harrisburg, Philly, Baltimore for a while, you had opportunities to go to bigger markets, but like a number of people, you wanted to be close to home.
Well, I'll bounce that right over the net back at you, Rich. I always wonder why you didn't go bigger, and I know why now. I've known for years. I came back because inherently I want to be here. That's what you want to do. That's what George Hill wanted to do. That's what a lot of us want to do. That's what people in this room that we're facing up against right now do. And after almost a decade, you know, like eight plus years, the opportunities were coming, and it was, you know, climbing up that ladder. I always thought that's what I wanted. But then this variable came in out of left field, and it was, you know, kids. I had a child that was 2 years old going on three, another one that was zero and starting to crawl around a little bit. And it was time to come home. We were missing everything. Every time someone hit a 50th anniversary or there was a wedding or there was a mitzvah, whatever was going on, we were the ones that were kind of out in left field, just far enough away where we couldn't get home to a lot of things. So that wears on you, and so you make a choice. If I can still do something in this profession and go back, well, sure, I'm not going to make the money I made down there. I'm not going to get some of the opportunities I get down there. But you'd be surprised if you come back here. There's still opportunities. It's just that you kind of have to take the bigger job to come back. You know, and since you have some chevrons on your shoulder by stepping out, then maybe you can come back and do that. Or you can stick around. Like Timmy's a great example where he just built it right here and never left. And he built up that kind of experience and everything. But again, because of the infrastructure, the people around him, the opportunities he got, and the wonderful mentors that he had every step of the way, oblivious to it, I'm sure, when he was a little kid. But I'm sure he very much appreciates that now.
But then you have that transition, and you've been doing it for many years as a news director where the roles are reversed, and you become the mentor.
Yeah, you become the mentor and you're the manager. I mean, if you're a news director in a smaller market like this, you're basically an accountant. you're legal. You're like a lawyer. And you're HR. That's a lot of your job. You're recruiting people all the time. You're amortizing vehicles. You're looking at the best deal in paperclips. And counseling people and bringing along. And then the mentoring, of course, where that role is always there for the senior on-air people and behind-the-scenes people as well. We have the skills, and we made the mistakes years ago. We're no better than these kids. Some of them are going to be better than us, but they're just stepping into it, and they need that kind of guidance. I hit that pothole 20 times before my thick skull, you know, figured it out. Maybe they're quick enough to figure it out after one or two, and it's just me to give them a little bit of a roadmap. And so that's the funnest part of being in a smaller market, that we love sports, Rich, you know that. And playing, it's great, but coaching, it's great too. When you teach a kid how to hit a ball or you teach a kid how to field a ball properly or throw it, there's no better reward to me than that. It's the same thing with this when you teach a kid the tenets of journalism.
Part of that, too, is also having an eye for talent. And when I look at some of the people who have gone through Channel 5 over the course of the last 25 years, news reporters, anchors, sports people in particular, some very good ones there, but you did a great job of finding those people and nurturing that talent.
Well, thanks. You know, so you're saying I'm the Botts Nicola of
of
TV 5. If you don't know who Botts is, well, I guess you're going to be 70 plus to get that reference like Rich. But he actually scouted and signed Karyastrzemski, among other people.
Yeah.
He's a scout for the Sox.
I have to tell the story that for years we would just call each other and drop random obscure baseball names. You know, you would answer the phone and I would ask for Pepe Frias or something.
Exactly. And John Bacabella might be on the other end. Yeah.
But one of our favorites, and I dropped him in a message the other day, Bill Wamsnas.
Oh, love Bill Wamgans.
I
don't know how you pronounce it. It's like Napoleon Lajoie. Is it LaJoy? Who knows? They didn't broadcast back then.
No.
We have no idea. It's just in print. But anyways, Wamsgans, however you say his name, he committed the only unassisted triple play in World Series history. It's 1920, Cleveland Indians, and he committed the triple play. He may have gotten the opportunity to play for tragic reasons because Ray Chapman.
And you threw Carl Mays back at me.
Who threw that submarine into his head.
The only guy who killed a player in a game.
In a game. And unfortunately, Ray Chapman, the second baseman, I think he played 17, 18 years, never got to a World Series. He's finally on the threshold of it in August. He gets hit by a pitch and dies. And then this Bill guy. But I think Bill might have played shortstop. So maybe that wasn't a conflict. Right. But he would have been the guy he would have tandem with. And he had to hook up with a different person for the World Series, obviously.
All right, who's your favorite obscure player of all time?
Obscure player of all time?
I will say.
Well, there are certain statistics that really intrigue me more than anything else. We'll start with that. They have nothing to do with obscure players. One of the greatest players of all time, Stan Musial. Incredible stat that, I mean, you talk about guys who have a home advantage because they have the left field wall in Fenway or they have the short porch in Yankee Stadium. Stan Musial had 3,630 career hits. He had 1,815 at home, 1,815 on the road. Spread it over 24, 25-year career, and he had exactly the same. He batted 332 on the road, 331 at home, lifetime 331. The guy was so consistent, just wind him up no matter where he was, and he hit the same. So that's really remarkable. Another one I love is the guy who, the longtime relief pitcher, who Hoyt Wilhelm, yes, who was a starter for years and became a reliever and became a Hall of Fame reliever.
And are you going to throw out the home run statistic?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, bring it down. You know, I mean, his first at-bat in the major leagues, he lasted 21 years. He got in late, like 28 or so, played till he was almost 50.
He was also wounded at the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah, yeah, Hoyt Wilhelm. Yeah. And there's a lot of stories like that in Major League Baseball, guys that were heroic in the battlefield, you know, especially World War II, World War I. But anyways, Wilhelm gets up his first at bat. He hits a home run. He got up about 500 times in his career. Never hit another home run. That was it, you know, 20-something years later.
There you go.
Yeah.
Things you didn't know about Jim Morris, huh? Well, Jim, listen, congratulations on a fantastic career. And as you said before we went on, you're doing it the right way. You're getting out while you still love what you do.
Do love what I do. Like who I'm working for, like who I'm working with. And it's been a pleasure. And I like who I've been serving, too. You know, the viewers of Eastern and Central Maine have been remarkable and supportive through the years. And I can't say enough, you know, to thank them for that. And so this is the farewell. You got to go down to the things, right?
We're moving on. Okay. You had your time.
All right. Thank you very much. Well, I want to wish all of you a very holly and smead jolly Christmas. And I might add a Mike Dolly Christmas.
Oh, a Mike Dolly.
Mike Dolly.
Oh, Jim.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
Thank you, Jim. Good luck. If you get bored in retirement, come back and visit.
All right, well, I'll be knocking on the door every day.
Jim Morris here on The Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. We wish Jim well in all those future endeavors. Our thanks to him, Nick Charlton of Maine Football, Upton Bell, and thanks to you for joining us and making us a part of your Sunday morning. Coming up tomorrow afternoon, hey, it's our last live show for a spell before we head out on our little holiday break. Tomorrow, Alan Adams of the Maine Edge has got movie reviews on Pass the Popcorn. We talk Patriots and more with Nick Coyd of ABC6 in Providence. And a couple of specials from the year that was. We'll drop in some flashback conversations from the last 12 months that we couldn't quite fit in to our end-of-the-year wrap-up. Hope you'll join us tomorrow afternoon for Downtown, starting at 4, right here on Z62 Retro Radio. You're gonna be-